It's the Book of the Week.
It's that time of the week again. I can't believe Patrick caught me singing along to the music again. I'm Magic Matt. It's time for Portsmouth Authors Collective. And I have with me this week, obviously, the one and only Laurie Westron, founder of Portsmouth Authors Collective. And we've got Otto Redman in to talk to us about some books that are probably just going to scare us to death because he is one of Portsmouth's premier horror writers. Good morning.
Good morning, Matt. It's good to see you. And yes, we've got Otto Redman in the studio today. Now, Otto's fascination with horror started from a young age, and he sought out horror and gothic literature from authors including Mary Shelley, Bram Stoker, H.P. Lovecraft, and Edgar Allan Poe, and developed a love for the classic Hammer horror and B-movies of the 1960s and 70s. During the COVID pandemic, he made the decision to redirect his career into horror writing stories of his own, centered around his hometown. His first novel, The Vampire of Portsmouth, was released in 2022, and having enjoyed the process, Otto released Sarah's Cats in 2024. His third novel, The Old Forest, is due out late in 2025. Otto lives near Portsmouth in the south of England with his numerous cats. So, welcome, Otto.
Morning.
I'm just going to read the blurb for Vampire of Portsmouth, just to give people a sense of what the book is about. Struggling to cope with the accidental death of her father and her mother's terminal illness, Helen Oswald is trying to get her life back on track by attempting to return to her academic career by attending an interview at the prestigious King's College in London. She accidentally misses the last train home and by chance meets with the mysterious and charismatic Adam Decker. From that day on, her life gradually begins to unwind itself at a frightening speed. She starts having terrible nightmares and begins sleepwalking, something the medical profession can't explain. What caused the mysterious marks on her neck? Why does she feel that she is continually being watched? And who does the strange voice in her dreams belong to that calls for her to return to London? Will Helen be able to cope with the terrible truth and save her soul, or will she be claimed by darkness forever? Ooh, that sounds fantastic, Otto.
Very dark, very dark.
Oh, yes. Well, you know, I must admit, horror is not my go-to genre. However, I have read Bram Stoker and, you know, a couple of the classics. So, you know, I think there is something about a vampire novel that is really quite intriguing.
Yeah, I mean, it's got a lot of old lore about it, and obviously new ideas coming in as the years go by, and other authors and filmmakers make their own interpretation of the mythology. What I was trying to do was take a look back to the more older roots of the legends, in particular the more Hammer style vampires to what some views of them are today.
Yeah, back to the classics.
I like my vampires bitey.
Fantastic. And yeah, the original vampires, you know, you think back to Nosferatu.
Brilliant film.
And he's not the least bit attractive, is he?
No.
And you know, so he doesn't bear too much resemblance to, the more modern vampires.
Yes, which is one specific thing I wanted to get away from. To me, vampires are not someone you particularly want to date. They are a monster, and they are solely thinking of one thing, which is using you as a carcass to get their blood from. They'll use all manipulative means to get that. In the book, Adam Decker is a very charismatic man, but his mind is solely focused on using you. They are a creature that just uses and throws. They're parasitic.
Right. That's I think that's a good description, parasitic. I think that's a good place to stop. We'll come back in just a few minutes and talk more about vampires with Otto Redman, but let's play a track.
Right, well, let's stick with the horror theme then. Go for a bit of Blue Oyster Cult, Don't Fear the Reaper.
So we're back with Otto Redman, and I want to find out from you, Otto, because there are so many vampire stories out there already. Why write another one? What are you trying to do?
At the time, as it was during lockdown, I'd been watching quite a few vampire films, and they were beginning to infuriate me with their take on the legends. So I decided to set about trying to write my own one, where I could bring it back to the vampires that I knew from, I shouldn't really say childhood, but from when I started watching Hammer films and that. And I wanted to bring it back to that more brutal, parasitic relationship, to them being nasty again. Hopefully the tide is turning on that now with the release of Abigail, which I thought was an amazing film, and with Nosferatu now, the remake in the cinemas, it does appear that the nasty vampire has made a return.
Oh, so. Well, maybe, yes, that's it. Maybe you've hit at just the right time. So tell us a little bit more about the character of Helen and why choose her as the book's protagonist.
I typically like to try and set somebody that's not going to necessarily be very good in the situation. So Helen is actually an academic in the book. She is a chemistry lecturer at university. So her background is not in believing in fantasy things. It's literally working with the facts in front of her. So I thought it'd be interesting to take someone like that and see how they would cope with something that blends in with legend. And it's a struggle that she has. And she starts to read Dracula and compare it with her symptoms and begins to think, hang on, this is a bit close. This is a bit too similar to what I've got. And then she starts looking into it. She takes an academic approach to looking through the literature and what there is on vampires. And that then leads her down her own way of how she's going to face her problems.
Oh, fantastic. Okay, it becomes more and more intriguing. So how does your vampire fit in with the established folklore?
I've tried to keep it fairly close to what I would call standard vampire beliefs, in that they can go out in daytime. They don't immediately crumble to dust. They lose their powers during daylight, which is why they tend not to return. Full daylight, yes, it will kill them, but if they're covered up, they can survive periods. So you will see Adam Decker around during the daytime, which is perhaps a little bit more scary, really, when you consider what is a nighttime predator is actually around during the hours of light. But I've tried to keep to that. The things like stakes and religious symbols like the cross will affect them, if you have a belief in it, of course. So it's one of these things where it takes a balance. So it's sort of all the different bits and pieces fitted together. Hopefully will be expanded later when I write a sequel to it.
Oh, fantastic. A sequel. So, yeah. And your books are quite hefty books. How many pages have you got
there? Vampire Portsmouth was only 320. That was quite a small page count for me.
Oh, okay.
The Sarah's Cats turning out 750 was a bit of a surprise. My next one, again, is about 400 to 500. So
okay.
They're a bit more medium-sized books.
Right. So how did you go about tackling something as iconic as vampires?
When I tend to write, I tend to see the scene in my head. So I will start off by writing what I'm seeing. So I will try and create an atmospheric scene. So I will try and place it in situations that people may recognise from other films that they've seen. So dark streets are obviously quite a good place. But then again, I also like to twist it on its head and have open areas like a park. You wouldn't normally think of a vampire attacking a park, but it can happen, let's say.
And that would be even more scary, wouldn't it? Because you wouldn't be expecting that sort of danger.
But again, this ties in with the folklore, is that they can move around as animals, so wolves, crows, bats. So you then start becoming suspicious. Is that crow that's sitting on the branch looking at me, is that a vampire? Or is it actually just a crow calling away, being a bit of a nuisance? What is it? You don't know. So it adds that sort of layer of ambiguity into it, which makes you feel a bit more paranoid, I think.
Yeah. I can feel that sort of tension from what you've just described. Okay, well, where can people buy your books, Otto?
Locally, please try and get into New To You Books in Cosham. They stock my writing, and you can get them on any good bookseller on the internet. And watch out for me at various horror conventions and festivals. If you look on my website, www.ottoredman.com, I will shortly be putting up a list of where you can meet me in person throughout the year.
Fabulous. Well, it's been lovely having you in, Otto, and I look forward to seeing you again.
Thank you very much.
And I've got a big smile on my face because the track that Otto has chosen for us is by Stevie Nicks, one of my favourite artists, and it's Moonlight, A Vampire's Dream. Good choice, Otto.
She's lonely, lost.
2 of the Portsmouth Authors Collective Book Club with me, Magic Matt, chatting to Laurie Westron. That was a really good interview with Otto, I thought.
It was. You know, he's a really interesting guy. And yeah, I do really like the sound of his books.
I do. I love horror books. I just enjoy the whole vampires and werewolves and everything like that. But totally different type of book. You told me last week your book was finished, your manuscript was finished, and you're about to send it to an agent.
Yeah, I'm just kind of starting that process now.
Yeah. Now, when we were chatting earlier, you said to me that you hadn't actually had an agent for your previous books. So why is it you want one now?
Well, so the first book was published by a small independent publisher, Fairlight Books, mm-hmm. and they accept submissions directly from the author.
Right.
But most of most larger publishers won't. They have to come from an agent, and so the agent is sort of the middleman. Agents have been described as a sort of gatekeeper, and publishers know that any material that comes through an agent has been vetted. It's gone through a process. It's been looked at carefully, right. And they know that it's going to be of a sound quality. Mm. And usually agents know what a particular publisher is looking for.
Right. So they're acting sort of like a quality control between authors,
yes.
and publishers.
Yeah, that's right. That's yeah. right.
Okay, great. So what does an agent actually do then? What's the sort of process involved?
So they do represent a book. So they become kind of a cheerleader, mm-hmm. for a book. And like I say, they know which publishers are publishing which sort of material, so they know who to target.
Uh-huh.
And they'll promote your book to a publisher. So if you're lucky enough to have two or more publishers interested in your novel, your agent will use that to your advantage and will hopefully be able to negotiate a higher advance for the
right.
author.
So they must take a fair bit of stress away from it then, because they're going to know which publishers to approach with what kind of material and that sort of thing.
Absolutely, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So I suppose that expertise has got to come with a price tag, hasn't it? What sort of cost is involved in using an agent?
So I guess the first thing to stress is that you never pay an agent up front.
Right. Okay.
And so the agent earns their money by selling your book, mm-hmm. and they will then take a cut of that. So typically I think they receive about 15% of any money that the author receives from the publisher.
Right.
So
okay.
The advance, they'll take 15% of the advance, and then 15% of any royalties that the author will earn in the future. But yes, you never have to pay them up front.
Right. So if there's an agent asking for money up front, probably find a different agent.
That's right. Yeah. And you know, and yeah, it's this similar with publishers. If publishers ask you for any money up front, then yes, you need to avoid them.
So where would I start looking?
So there are a number of places that have like a database, mm-hmm. of literary agents. Query Tracker is one.
Right.
And you can look up agents by name, mm-hmm. or you can look up which agents represent which type of material. So I'm looking for agents who represent literary fiction and historical fiction,
mm-hmm.
and that will give me a list of agents to look at, and then I have to go through and check their own website or their agency website and follow them on social media as mm-hmm. well to find out what they're interested in. But the task now, once you've got your list of possible agents, is to find out what it is that they're interested in,
yeah.
and
so,
what
so
they're
you're sort
looking
of interviewing
for.
Them for the job of your agent.
Well, I'm maybe not so much interviewing them, but I'm digging away,
yeah.
to try and find, you know, those agents who might be interested in what I'm
yeah.
writing. Yeah,
because it's got to be a good match with you, otherwise they're not going to.
Well, absolutely,
your book. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and yeah, that's right. Right. You want to be able to find somebody that you're going to gel with, and mm. who is going to understand what you want and what you're trying to do and help you get it. Because,
yeah.
you know, that's part of their job, is to represent you as best as they can to help you flourish. And yeah, so you've got to have... Yeah.
And it's always easier to promote the kind of things that you enjoy yourself as
absolutely.
Well anyway. So,
yep.
You know, you find an agent that enjoys your books.
Yep, that's right. That's right.
Brilliant. That's given me lots to think about. Perhaps we can chat more about that next week because time's getting on. We're getting
absolutely.
Near the end of the program.
Yeah.
However... I did notice there's something called Bookfest coming up. What can you tell me about that?
Yes, yes. Well, Bookfest is about to start. It runs from the 18th of February this year through to the 9th of March. So, yeah, we've got about 3 weeks of, book-related...
3 weeks of books everywhere in the city. What a shame.
That's right. So, yes, I think it'll be a good event this year. We've got a number of PAC authors taking part, running workshops. Christine Lord is going to be launching her book, Women at War. We'll be talking to Christine later about that. And then we've got various events aimed at children, workshops for children, writing workshops.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be a good program for people to look at. So, yeah, people can get more information either by going to the Portsmouth Authors Collective Facebook page or by just looking up Portsmouth Bookfest 2025, and you'll get a full program of events. And also the library. The library has nice little booklets that people can pick up as well.
I think I might make sure I pop in the library
absolutely.
And grab one of those.
Absolutely. It's a very good excuse to go into the library.
Yes, it's a good excuse to go and look at more books.
That's right.
Well, thank you very much for chatting to me this week. I'm looking forward to next week's program already.
Oh, well, thank you very much, Matt, and I'll look forward to seeing you then.
Cheerio.